Have you ever had a feeling that something dreadful was about to happen?
This whole premise is sweaty.
Okay, moving right along.
You gonna plagiarize the whole thing for us? Do you have any thoughts of your own on this matter?
Just remember that this thing isn't as black as it appears.
Hold on to your butt.
The only difference between me and a homeless man is his job.
I'm glad you're here to tell us.
I'm looking for the least possible amount of responsibility.
And that ain't bad.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Man's got to know his limitations.
I'm glad you came back.
In the bag.
Network. I drink it up.
Welcome to Bag Pod, everyone. The return of the glorious TV Bag Pod. We'll be talking some Game of Thrones premiere. We'll be talking about the first 2.5 episodes of Mad Men. We've got Jimmy TV.
Hey.
Joe Dog.
Mm-hmm.
And making his Bag Pod premiere, Mr. Alan Pierre.
Hello. Hi.
So.
Welcome, Alan. Welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
He's written some pretty good stuff for the website so far, so hopefully this is good in podcast form.
Oh, okay, no pressure.
In any case, we are coming hot off the heels of the Game of Thrones Season 2 premiere. If any of you guys have listened to all of the copious recounts of Season 1, you'll know that we're pretty big fans. Lots of the trailers that we put up were basically footage from the first episode.
Yeah.
That's to be expected, I suppose. I mean, that's no surprise, really. But yeah, we've been introduced to a lot of new characters. We've been reintroduced to some old ones. So why don't we just start off there? How do you feel about some of the introductions to the new characters? Mainly, before we get into this, in the second book, it is actually not Stannis or Melisandre who has the point of view chapters. It's Davos, who is the bearded, kind of balding guy that has the aside with the maester on the beach before he walks off.
The elderly gent.
Yes. So,
and he kind of always has his head tilted down. Like, his chin's always on his chest for some reason.
I think that's in the
TV show, not the book.
I think it might kind of be like that in the book, too, just out of a service kind of thing. I mean, he's supposed to be kind of a lowly born person, so, and, you know, he's very respectful of his king. So I didn't mind that much, constantly looking at the ground.
That's interesting.
I got you. Yeah, that is an interesting take on that.
Yeah, but how do we feel that they introduced him? I mean, it's kind of hard to tell that he's actually the main character in the book. At least the point of view character, because they didn't spend a lot of time with Davos. What are we thinking about that?
I agree that they didn't spend a lot of time. I think maybe in this first episode they're just trying to catch everyone up with what's been going on, and I'm sure we'll get some good Davos stuff coming up.
I would hope so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I found it interesting that they, at least maybe I missed this, but I found it interesting that they didn't show off his two-fingered hand.
He did thumb his pouch at one point.
Oh, did he? I didn't see that.
Yeah, I didn't see that either.
I think it was when they were cutting between the beach and the Dragonstone table, the map of Westeros scene. I'm pretty sure I saw it, but I'm not positive now that
he got me down myself. And when he pulled the sword out of the sand, I noticed that he pulled it up with one hand and then kind of caught it and kept it in that one. Like, he didn't use his other hand at all. Like, he just used one hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, he's really playing up that no fingers or only half a fingers on his hand job. Alan, have you read the books? Do you know what's going on here?
I have not read the books. And actually, I was going to say that I have been able to follow everything that I saw except that scene. And all the scenes at that, is this the new, where do those take place, those scenes?
In Dragonstone, which is right to the east of King's Landing, right?
Okay.
Island, yes.
Yeah, it's an island out in the bay.
The island that they showed in the opening credits?
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out what was going on other than that we were meeting Stannis.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which I had been waiting for.
Yes.
And I didn't understand the other than her saying that, you know, this is the prophecy, that he pulled a sword,
yeah,
with like a sword in the stone thing going on there.
Yeah,
kind of, yeah, kind of, a little bit.
I don't know I mean, there's clearly a lot of backstory. I don't think we're going to get into it that much. Hopefully the series will make it apparent throughout.
Yeah, just a little bit here and there. But I think I thought that was kind of one of the problems with Davos, maybe, is that you don't really see him do too much ever. I think he's a lot more of a behind-the-scenes person, so I'm not sure if you're ever going to really see him that much.
Yeah,
I think they might make Stannis the more main character, just since he is kind of the more main character.
I mean, yeah, that definitely makes sense. But I don't know. I mean, Davos, I mean, there's definitely a lot of Davos kind of plotting or, you know, lots of discussing with Stannis and stuff, so.
Right.
We'll see what happens there. Joe, what did you want to say?
Well, as Jake was saying, like, he doesn't do a whole lot. Like, he his chapters is a lot of him thinking about stuff, not necessarily doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be hard for them to do that well in a TV show. Like, obviously, he can just kind of be walking around and narrating his thoughts, but that obviously doesn't play very well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he definitely could kind of, you know, get shortened a little bit to get the short side of the stick or something like that, however that phrase goes, in the TV show, just because he's just not doing anything.
I suppose that's true. Of course, while we got introduced to Davos, who's the point of view character, we got introduced as well to Stannis and Melisandre. What do we think those introductions, how do we think those played?
I like both of them a lot, especially Melisandre, how she kept repeating, I can't remember what the line is right now, but she kept saying the it's dark and the whatever.
There's much to fear in the dark or something like that.
Yeah, but the light, the fire is light the way. Yeah, whatever. I liked how she kept repeating that. It was very religious zealotly, I thought, which I liked.
Definitely a little creepy, too.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But at the same time, was it okay that I was turned on by that? Is she someone that...
she is described as quite a fetching woman in the book, so
much so that I was expecting something even a little bit stronger than what we got. She was a little bit older than I thought she was going to be.
True, but she was showing off a lot of cleavage.
I'm pulling a page out of Bags' book here by complaining about how they're not attractive enough.
Not sexy enough, yeah.
Exactly. I thought they did a real good job. She definitely has some crazy eyes going on, which I think she'll be able to use to her advantage.
Crazy eyes are always a plus.
Oh yeah, especially with her character.
In the book, Stannis is always being talked about how he's grating his teeth, and you could definitely tell that he was kind of like clenching his jaw, funny, in some of the scenes. So I thought that was nice.
Interesting how their story ended with her drinking that poison and she seemed impervious to it. Yeah, was this you guys had prior knowledge of this, I'm guessing, because you'd read the books that she
right.
Is she Targaryen? Is that what the thing?
Her little throat jewel was supposed to shine, like right as she drank the poison, kind of giving you the impression that something weird was going on and that she was going to be fine. Not that she was just, I don't know. I mean, it did shine as they were like pulling away from her, but they left that open ended a little bit more, I guess.
She's definitely wielding some magic.
Yeah.
So just keep an eye out for that. She's not really a normal character. She's going to be using a lot of magic and a lot of religious nonsense. So,
which is going to, yeah. But so Stannis was good too, though, with his letter, doing his letter thing.
Yeah.
Insisting that they throw in Kingslayer to degrade him, then insisting that they throw in Sir because he's still a knight. I mean, that was very.
Yeah, no, that was definitely.
That's how Stannis is, and the entire series is like that.
Very honorable, but truthful at the same time.
Very blunt. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think my favorite scene for the introduction of the characters might have been the opening scene there when they're on the beach and Stannis. You could tell Stannis kind of wasn't really believing, almost like he was kind of it almost seemed like, I mean, he was kind of into it, but he was also like, come on, this is kind of ridiculous too.
Mm-hmm,
like he
mm-hmm.
wasn't just like deer-eyed in the headlights or anything, you know.
He wasn't going King of the North or any shit like that.
can we talk about that for a second, because that was one of the worst things to me. was when Robb Stark and them were around the table, and he's telling the Lannister guy his demands or whatever, and then someone tosses in a King of the North, and then like three other people toss in a King of the North for no apparent reason whatsoever.
Yeah, no, that was
That was really cheesy
that
and
was
terrible.
A real choice.
These guys are really feeling those three victories they've gotten.
I mean,
they're getting a little cocky, a little cocky.
They're drunk with victory, and it's a trying time for them. And they're just kind of trying to rally.
That's all they got, man.
That's all they got. The King of the North.
I was also thinking that in that scene that I'd hate to be that Lannister messenger because he's probably going to get killed. I mean, I would hate to be the one to have to give the king that message.
Yeah, the king's not going to be happy with that message.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to be happy with that message. But yeah, no, clearly the Stark Bannermen have been relegated to cheerleader duty since about episode 8.
Yeah, and there was no Greyjohn was yelling.
Oh, that's right.
For the King of the North, which is a little upsetting.
Mm-hmm. How about Theon? We got some more Theon in this episode. We get him. Again, he's kind of playing they're giving him a more sympathetic role. He's a bit more conniving in the books. At least that's what I felt.
Absolutely.
So
he's really pledging that fealty.
Yeah, he is. Yes, he is. Really playing up the honorableness to the Stark family.
And the fact that he actually believes that his dad's going to listen to him.
Right.
Yeah, even though he hasn't seen him in like 15 years or something like that, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. After the fact. As we usually do.
As Joe usually does.
Yes. What are we... We were talking about Rob a little bit, and he's kind of being mirrored with Cersei, I believe, where they're both kind of being... They're acting a little too high and mighty for the moment. Cersei especially.
Well, I thought Cersei was actually toned down a little bit more as they tried to play Joffrey off a lot worse. I thought they kind of switched a little bit.
Well, there wasn't a lot of Cersei in the episode. I mean, there was an okay amount, but most.
I mean,
of
dude,
it,
I think Cersei had the most stuff in this episode. I think she had at least three scenes.
With the guards and
Littlefinger.
Yeah.
Tommy Carcetti.
Yeah.
Yes. Tommy Carcetti, who apparently has gotten his voice lowered in the.
Oh my God, are we talking about that right now?
Before we go there, I just want to say that was definitely the scene where Cersei seemed to be a little bigger than her britches.
I liked that scene a lot. I thought that was her putting Littlefinger more in his place. Letting him know that you can be smart, you can be a behind the scenes person all you want. But you better be careful to not say some stupid stuff every now and then, because it might get you caught.
Yeah, I thought that was weird of Littlefinger. I thought he was smarter than that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Well, kind of I said before, is that Littlefinger's actually kind of a stupid idiot when it comes down to it, who just thinks that he's playing this game even though he's not really.
I mean, yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm not saying I had a problem with the scene. It just seemed like Cersei... Cersei definitely wielding the power that she has now, as opposed to last year where it was kind of a lot more behind-the-scenes stuff, perhaps.
And on HBO Go, you can watch it, with the interactivity or whatever, and most of the time it's just pretty weak stuff. Like, they'll be like, if they're talking about Torn Square, here's a map of Torn Square.
Right.
But after that scene, they had a little clip where the actress who plays Cersei, just talked about kind of her motivation for like 45 seconds or like that. And she was like dropping F-bombs and stuff like that and really doing her accent. And, it sounded like basically it was just like she was doing on the commentaries. And
yeah.
she just really won my heart with all that.
Yeah, it's really charming.
She's got the sailor's mouth.
Yeah.
You could tell she was really into it, so that was pretty sweet.
Yeah. But
all right, but Baelish, come on, people. Yeah. Like, what's the story with that? Like, is he doing that? Is that an effect that they're doing? What's the story?
Here's what I think. I think they realized his accent was so bad in the first season. Mm-hmm. They were like, we got to do something about this. Let's just try to have you drop your voice down a little bit so that no one can really tell what you're trying to say or like talk with what dialect, and just kind of let it go with that.
I mean, I would have to agree with that because
it sounded better. It sounded better than he did last season.
Oh, no. I don't know about that.
It didn't sound – I mean, it wasn't much worse if it was worse. He definitely – I don't know, maybe if – I mean, it could be maybe a character trait as well, whereas last season he seemed a lot more airy and, like, kind of in control, whereas this time, I don't know, maybe he's feeling the effects of the new king and stuff. Maybe I'm just giving the creators a little too much credit. Yeah,
you really are. I can't think of any reason why they would do this. And I'm praying that maybe it was just some effect that they did, and now they'll realize how ridiculous. Has there been like outrage on the internets about this thing, and maybe they'll lose it?
I don't think there's been quite as much about this as about some other things.
Well, there should be.
I mean, Baelish only had like the one and a half scenes there, so
yeah.
And he damn near single handedly ruined the episode with that ridiculous palette.
How about the fact that it seemed to me, at least, they skipped over a lot of the first part of the book.
Batman, you told me that earlier, and I actually really don't agree with you at all.
Really? I feel like they did.
I think in the book they focused on the Arya a lot more in the first third, maybe.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking.
But outside of that, I thought they were actually kind of fine scope-wise.
I mean, clearly the Stannis stuff was definitely all at the beginning of the book. I didn't have a problem with that, but...
Right. I don't know if you noticed this or not, but... Peter Dinklage actually was the first billed in the credits.
Mm-hmm.
And then they obviously introduced him and then the other two Lannisters first. So I think they're definitely going to be pushing Jaime, Cersei, and Tyrion on us this season, which isn't necessarily a bad thing at all.
Although, to be fair, Jaime doesn't have very much to do in the second book.
Not in the second book. I think it's going to be a little bit different here in the second series. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
in the second season.
That'll be fun to see how they do this.
Do you think that Dinklage's credits getting pushed forward has anything to do with his popularity and his Golden Globe win?
Definitely. I definitely think it has something to do with that. And then also just the fact that there's not really, you know, like they played up, you know, Ned Stark being the Sean Bean being the lead before. Obviously, they can't do that anymore. And so they got to pick someone.
I mean, they're not going to give us Aidan Gillen, right?
Right. I think the Golden Globe helps a lot. And then also... I don't think I'm giving too much away, but he plays a big role in the series, in the book.
Good.
So you'll get a lot of the dink.
Yeah,
he was amazing. The first 7.5 minutes of the show was awesome.
Oh yeah,
he is incredible.
Yeah, I think Dinklage has the biggest name as well. So you usually lead with your with your heavy hitters.
I'm saying like also like screen time, he might actually be like the leader with that too. So it works out both ways for the dink, as it should be.
What else do we have? I guess we got a little Daenerys
And. I think in her first chapter in the book, she already got to that abandoned city. You know what I'm talking about?
I think by the end she had,
Not the actual city, but like where like there was water and stuff like that.
Ghost town.
But I mean, the first thing that you notice about Dany is her looking through this dragon, and it was just terrible, and making a weird face at it too. I could forgive the not looking at it right, but the face she was making, I have no idea what was going on.
Yeah, she's really struggling with how to act with this dragon.
Yeah,
but the dragon looks really nice. Like the thing itself, I think it looks really awesome. But just the interaction between human and CG across the board, not just with Dany. It's particularly bad with Dany, but it's not good. It's not good.
Yeah, the CGI in general is rather lackluster. I'm interested to see what they do with the dragons when they get bigger and bigger, because I think then it could end up being a lot of bad touch.
Well, maybe it'll be helpful, because then they'll all right, the dragon's huge and it's right here, as opposed to being like, all right, there's going to be this teeny little dragon, you've got to look at it, its eyes are going to be right about here. So it might actually be easier, but we'll see.
I mean, to act, yeah, but I'm saying like CGI looks-wise, it could be.
Oh, I gotcha.
Also, with the direwolf, I thought it looked far and away the best when it was coming around the cage. Not by Rob yet, but then when it was by Rob, it looked like someone had just like photoshopped this giant thing. Like someone had like taken a picture of it, enlarged it, and then put it back in. Like it just looked terrible.
Yeah, it looked a little weird.
Yeah, it was definitely off. The lighting was off on that thing too. So hopefully the CGI will get a little better there. What did we think?
Jumping back to Dan real quick.
Okay.
Clearly, like she kind of played up about how Jorah's like her boy, And then not only Jorah,
the Water Rider.
Yeah, her serving boy.
Yeah, Taro, right? Yeah.
What's going on with what's up with that?
Maybe her loins are frothing.
Whoa.
Oh.
It's been a while. It's been a while since Drogo. That's all I'm saying.
So that should be fun. We got a nice little love triangle going on. And then also, I thought the shoulder pad that she had that the dragon sits on is pretty sweet. Nice little costuming job there.
It was kind of cool. I'll have to take a look at that.
It was pretty sweet. It's just a little shoulder pad, but it's pretty cool.
Back to the CGI, I'd have to say the most jarring thing for me was where all this King's Landing came from.
When they showed King's Landing, when Shay was there?
Yes.
On the balcony, I was like, what am I looking at right now? Then I was like, oh, I guess that's supposed to be King's Landing. And then they showed Shay out of there, and I was like, oh, my God, it's such atrocious.
Yeah, I mean, the King's Landing somehow grew like 20 times since season one. Like, before it seemed like, I mean, clearly it's supposed to be a big city. But, like, from season one, it seemed a little smaller, you know? But now, all of a sudden, it's like this expansive, almost ancient Rome-looking thing.
Well, you saw how Joffrey was, you know, remodeling his throne room. He's the infrastructure king. So maybe he did some building.
Yeah, he's put some serious work in here.
He got on some Game of Thrones Sim City, and that shit's been developing like hotcakes.
Exactly.
That definitely looked like something out of like Riven or something almost.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's an old reference for everyone out there.
Went over my head. Again, I thought the CG itself looked fine, like when it was just on the CG. But then when they panned over and they tried to incorporate the live action, it just was real.
Yeah, it was definitely when they were doing dual things when it would stand out the most. Mm-hmm. I thought.
How about? I guess there's not much else to talk about. We also got to see, I guess, Summer's face, which is Bran's direwolf.
That camera effect they have wasn't planned, right?
Yeah, that dream sequence was real budget for sure. the nice little tunnel vision with the faded outer rims was
with that vignette. Yeah, they got to do better than that.
I thought it was the smoke monster from Lost at first.
That's like a stock, you know, Final Cut plugin that they were using. They got to get something nice in that.
Yeah, and couple that with
an incredibly raccoonish Osha. What was she doing? She was like crawling around on all fours, cocking her head all weird.
She's a wildling.
She's a wildling, son.
Yeah, but she's really playing it up this time.
Maybe they just wanted more. How about that comet though?
Oh man, they showed it a ton. Since we have given a lot of crap for them showing about a lot of bad CGI scenes, I thought when they panned down onto Dany's group was pretty sweet.
Okay.
From the comet down onto Dany's group, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
It was a pretty big shot that I liked.
The first comet
was real terrible, but then I felt like the comet got better, and they did a good job. I thought a really good job, actually, of using that to transition in between, and a few other transitions. They did a really good job of kind of tying everything together.
Mm-hmm. We also got, I guess, the last part of the story here, the last character we haven't gotten to is Mr. Jon Snow at Craster's Keep. Mm-hmm.
Craster was, again, he wasn't as ugly as I thought maybe he was going to be.
Yeah, I thought he would be much sketchier looking at least.
Me too, like a West Virginia backwoods deliverance type person, you know?
Right.
Like, he would have been, like, if they had cast Lord Frey as Craster, I would have felt that was the perfect casting.
In fact, I would have allowed that to happen if it was just the same person.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe his hair in a ponytail or something to make it look a little different. But yeah, no, Craster definitely didn't seem nearly as sleazy and creepy as...
He was way too civilized.
He was way too like clean, like yeah,
that's,
like
that's what I'm saying.
Cut.
Yeah.
His hair was nice and trimmed properly. He'd cut his beard. He looked way too with it. He looked like he just came as like a lieutenant on the front lines of a battle, and he'd just come back to chill a little bit. He didn't look right
to chill with his daughter wives.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, Mr. Snow, Jon Snow, was just staring daggers through him the whole time.
Mm-hmm. I like how they always give him a lot of crap for looking pretty.
Yeah.
Because he's not supposed to look good, right?
Yeah.
In the books. Yeah. I mean, he's never described as good looking. So yeah. I like that they always give him crap for it.
Because he is.
He's a very pretty boy. So I like the. I mean, I know. I think I would give him crap about it. So I'm glad other people do.
Jimmy TV doesn't like the pretty boys.
No good. Not when they're as bad of actors as he is.
Maybe it was me. I don't know. It felt like. I don't remember John being so clear about his loathsomeness, but I might have just forgotten about that.
Well, he slept out in the woods in the book, didn't he?
Yeah, he got kicked out of the tent.
He's not too pleased. I'm not exactly sure why. What do you think the motivation is for him being so pissed off at Craster? I mean, other than the obvious, of course.
Maybe it's also just a prejudice towards people north of the Wall. You know, they live their lives so separately. I mean, that guy certainly was giving them crap about being Southerners.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe it was something to do with that and his really gross lifestyle.
Right.
Some say gross.
Others say felony.
Mm. Well, I mean, like the one guy from the Night's Watch said, you know, wildlings have been coming and going north of the Wall for years, and Craster's always around. Craster's still there for some reason. He said he must be doing something right.
Genius. But yeah, I mean, I think, do we have anything else on the first episode?
I can't wait to get into Arya's story more.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we started off pretty nicely. So there was a lot
I mean, we haven't even talked about the last 4 or 5 minutes where they kill a baby. They just start killing a bunch of teenagers.
Yeah.
Not only that, but Roz as well makes her.
Oh God, that cry. Was painful to watch.
Yeah.
And having heard you the cheesy repeat of all the lines from last season, oh my God.
Mm-hmm. That was not.
Wait, what cheesy lines from last season?
When they're doing like the original sex position.
Yeah.
And like teasing into it.
Oh, she's schooling the Hure.
Wash yourself. You're both working tonight. Both are direct quotes from last season.
Yeah.
That Littlefinger told her. And I hate it when people do that. That's really annoying.
They definitely killed that baby.
Yeah. speaking of which, I liked Janos Slynt in the book. I like how they're portraying him so far. In the series.
Yeah, he's been pretty solid so far. We got a lot of Janos this
episode. We did. Robert has a lot of bastards, apparently.
Well, I mean, he really enjoyed the fucking around, so you can't blame the man.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious as to... We know of two other actual bastards by reading the books. A little bit of a spoiler alert here. Obviously, we know Gendry's one. That's not a spoiler. The other one is, though, is that there's another one on Dragonstone... Or actually, I guess he's in Storm's End right now.
Yeah.
Edric Storm. And I'm curious as to if they're going to bring him into the fold as soon as possible because of how big of a deal they made that in the first episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't get that much play until the end of the book, right? Or even the third book.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, so.
Oh, you know who I just realized that we did not get any of, but which I'm very pleased about, is Patch Face.
Yeah, Patchface got cut out. That's a good call.
Dragonstone. In the books, Stannis has a daughter who we didn't get any of, and she's got like a fool that hangs out with her all the time. He was coming across the sea, and there was a big shipwreck, and so he was like lost at sea for a long time, and then he kind of popped up on the shore, still alive. And so he's always talking about, down under the sea,
he's always singing, yeah.
But in most of his verses, like they actually usually are prophetic in ways.
Yes,
so.
Yes, they usually mirror what's just about to happen. So.
When Stannis left the beach that night, he held his hand out when he was walking away, and there was a woman that they showed for a moment that wasn't the crazy.
Comely or homely. Which is the one for a not attractive woman?
Homely.
That
was a very homely
stays at
wife.
Home, homely.
There we go. That was his homely wife that he reached out for.
Yeah, oh. he's not married to the witch, Melisandre. She is just like his...
His Sally on the side.
Not at all.
We don't even know that. We don't know that, actually. But his wife is... she's like why... Like the big reason why Melisandre's in the first place. Like she's really into it. And Stannis is kind of going along with it, I think.
Yeah. Trying to appease the wife. Yeah.
But the wife's supposed to be real, but like I think she's all hairy and whatnot, isn't she? Doesn't she have like a thick mustache?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she's not looking.
I'm making that up.
I don't know about the mustache, but yeah, she's not supposed to be very good looking for sure.
I hope they don't
cut the mustache.
I'm sure they'll bring the mustache back in the fold. I would hope so.
It's the most important character in the entire second book. So,
I hope that they don't continue to have everybody in every episode. Having jumping around that much, where we only go to one location maybe twice, really feels rushed. And I don't think they should keep doing that. I hope they don't.
I don't think they will.
Well, I mean, we might not get that much Rob because. I mean, if they follow the books, because Caitlin goes down to meet with Renly, you know, so that'll take care of, you know, a whole slew of characters there. And then we've also got Dany, who will probably still be wandering, so they won't show her too much. You know, we might just get a check-in every episode.
Well, that was the other thing that I was a little curious about, actually, is Dany actually really doesn't have a lot of material in the second book.
She does absolutely nothing until, like,
how many episodes are there? Well, is it 10 episodes again?
It's 10 episodes. Yeah. I really don't remember Dany having that many chapters. I'm not going to get into it too much, because I'm like, Joe, I'm going to refrain from spoiling everything, but...
Spoiler alert. But yeah, no, she doesn't have much to do. She's just basically wandering that desert for the entire book until about three quarters of the way through.
Something like that.
I mean,
spoiler alert.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. Yeah, okay. Because that's clearly a spoiler.
But we saw... It should be... I think they'll start mixing it up some. I mean, obviously, we didn't get, like, any Arya, so they'll have to start putting that in, too, so...
Well, that was the thing, is her storyline, far and away, is the most exciting initially. Stuff starts hitting the fan with her ASAP.
Yeah. She has a lot of stuff go on, too, so... I don't know. I suppose we'll see what happens. I'm sure we'll get a really Arya-heavy episode next week.
I'm excited. Jake, what did you think overall about the stuff that they added? I thought it was pretty good.
Such as what? Like, I mean, I like the Littlefinger and Cersei scene, and the Cersei and Joffrey scene. I mean, I don't think those went down. Like, I mean, the Cersei and Joffrey scenes, they never really had that dynamic in the books. I actually liked it a lot.
Yeah,
I mean, we didn't get any POV from either of those two characters, so...
Alan, what do you think of our good King Joffrey?
I hate him so hard.
Yeah?
And I constantly, every scene, I'm just hoping, is there just some way he's going to get hurt or killed? When his mom slapped him in that really good scene, I was I was so excited. He had such a, you know, little pricks like that who have really nasty faces like that. You love to see them get hurt.
And he made that little pouty face too. Yeah. It was really on point. It was really great all around. And he looked around to see if people were watching.
They were.
It was so great.
And they were.
For a moment, I thought he was going to have everybody who saw it killed.
Yeah, you know that Carpenter's a dead man.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But instead, he just had all the babies killed.
Yeah.
That'll happen from time to time. So, based off of what you saw this episode, what do you think is the most fitting way for him to die?
I would like it to start off with him getting slapped 50 more times, because, like I said, I liked seeing that look on his face. You just slapped.
Would you prefer, because he gets slapped by Tyrion in the second episode of the first season. Whose slap do you think is better, the Cersei's or Tyrion's?
Tyrion's.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tyrion got him a few times.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he did tag him a few times.
Yeah. And then as far as actually getting that death done, I've been thinking about it. And first season of 24, Jack Bauer threatened to kill someone by shoving a wet towel down his throat till his stomach absorbed it just enough that it would be stuck to the towel, and then pulling the towel out and taking out his stomach.
I've never seen 24. Jack Bauer explain this to someone?
Jack Bauer loves to sit people down and say, I'm going to do this to you unless you give me what I need to know.
And, Sutherland. Yeah. Operating under the Patriot Act, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he went to the sticky towel pulling out the stomach in season one?
Yes.
How do you get better than that? Yeah. There are like seven seasons. Well, then
you can't really top that. He would just start partially doing it. He would just like shoot someone in the leg. I'm going to shoot you in the other leg if you don't tell me.
Well,
I believe at one point he hired a bunch of actors to pretend to be someone's family, and then had them pretend to be he executed them in front of the guy and just had to pretend.
Getting elaborate.
Yeah. That's a true American hero right there.
Put it on shows and everything.
He's getting all theatrical.
One more quick thing. I liked how they had Bronn and Tyrion's mountain people following him around. That was cool.
We
saw a little bit of Shaga in there.
Shaga, son of Shaga.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah. Good stuff. In any case, I think that's going to do it for the Game of Thrones talk.
Mm-hmm.
We will probably be coming at you guys every week from here on out discussing Game of Thrones newest episodes. So, come by for that, and we will bid Jimmy TV adieu.
Yeah, I'm gonna head out. You tell Eugenio I said what's up.
I will. We will. Since Jimmy TV apparently does not watch the Mad Men, he. I think he's going to begin at some point or another.
After I finish watching Battlestar Galactica, it's gonna take a while. I'll see you guys later.
All right, Jake.
Kick it.
There it is. Unfortunately, Eugene, we could not find him, so we're just going a three-man pod right now. The three-man weave. We've still got Jose, Joe Doug, and Alan here. We're going to be talking about the Mad Men now. We're about, two and a half to three episodes in. The first episode was 90 minutes, so, whatever you want to call that, an extended first episode, if you will.
Well, I mean, it was either one episode or two episodes. I don't know where you're getting this half episode from.
Well, I mean, it was only 90 minutes.
Yeah, but that's how long.
Basically, what I'm saying is I'm not quite sure. It was longer than a normal episode, but I'm not sure if they labeled it episode 1 and 2. Or.
I think they did because they were labeling this as season 5, episode 3 of last night.
Okay. So there you have it. We're three episodes into the newest Mad
Men. All right, I hope you guys enjoyed the pod. Thanks for listening.
In any case, we've been transported back to the 60s. We're in a whole almost different world than where we left it in season 4. I thought the first episode did a really good job of reacquainting us with the characters while also moving the plot forward, as well as setting up the clear themes that we're going to see during this season. We're not going to talk about the first episode too much. We won't go into it in too much in depth. But, do you guys have any passing thoughts on the first episodes?
I hate Pete Campbell so much.
Yeah, he's still a slime ball, but he's kind of the only person doing his job right now.
Yeah.
So it's frustrating to us and to, I think, the older partners how he is he's still a scumbag, but he's becoming the norm. He's moving to the center of being useful at Sterling Draper Cooper Price as opposed to the rest of them.
I'm kind of on Pete's side now.
How dare you?
They've clearly toned him down from the first season.
Toned him down. Are you insane?
He was like a 12-year-old boy in the first season, buying a BB gun and all that. Come on.
He's
matured. He called a meeting of the partners so he could complain about how he's got a column in his office. Come on now.
Well, that was a dick move, but he had a good point. He's the head of accounts. He's the one bringing in all the business. They have nothing without him. And Roger has this big office, and he's not really contributing anything anymore other than he can get the clients drunk.
Yes.
I definitely agree that Raj isn't pulling his weight, but I mean, Petey's got to go around a better way of doing it than the way.
Oh yeah. He's still a little bitch.
What did he do exactly to bring Mohawk in? He didn't really do anything, did he? It sounds like that they like Raj.
Well, he got the meeting, but then, you know, Roger sauced them up.
He sauced them up real good.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I like this new conniving Pete Campbell where he's, like, plotting out how to get back at Roger. And between the Coca-Cola meeting at 5 o'clock on Staten Island and now...
Roger deserved that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was asking for that.
The end of this episode where Pete takes credit for bringing Mohawk back in with the unveil of the Mohawk airplane.
He was a real son of a bitch for doing that.
But
Roger, you know, it all played into the theme of this of last night's episode. There was a lot of they're expanding more and more on the idea of youth and conflicts with youth, and you know, you kind of felt bad for Roger when he was giving that speech to Don about how, you know, he remembers Pete when he was a kid and he really liked the kid, and now I think he said he's dangling from the side of the building and Pete's got his feet on Roger's fingers. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of that in this episode with all the talk of who would take care of Don's kids if something happened to Betty, and then Don's whole nice conversation with that young girl at the Rolling Stones concert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely the theme of the season, one of the major themes at least, seems to be like a old guard versus young guard, a sort of youth culture clash with the old guard and that sort of stuff. So there's a clear
delineation with a lot of the people, but it seems like Don's trying to straddle the two, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because the thing with Don is that his job requires him to straddle the two. He needs to know what's going on, you know, in the young people's minds so that he can still be relevant when he's making ads.
Well, not just that, but he wants to be. I mean, he's got like the young wife and stuff like that, and like he was asking the girl at the Stones concert, like why she likes the Stones, and so you know, obviously maybe some of that is.
Well,
him.
See, the thing at the Stones.
So did you think that was like just like market research? Like,
I thought the Stones concert conversation was definitely market research. Like he got that whole Don steely-eyed look, and like we got like the little like cello flourish underneath. You know,
I think it was definitely market research because, I mean, let's be honest. 2 seasons ago, if he was in that situation, he would have nailed that girl right there on the spot.
That's true.
I mean, Don can pretty much have any girl that he wants, but he kept it strictly business. He just wanted to know what was going on in her mind. And in that moment when she said, you know, you're the problem with people of your generation, you don't want us to have any fun because you didn't. And he says, no, we're just worried about you. I think he definitely was looking at her more as a kid than in a sexual way.
I think so too, and I think that that's why. And she looked like a kid almost, you know, especially compared to him. I think that's one of the reasons why it wasn't so much market research that he was like actually trying to find out why. Because like obviously, like with his wife, they don't have, you know, the perfect relationship. Not that anyone ever does, but
we can't all be a Joe Doug and Kara.
right. So just like him trying to kind of figure out, you know, trying to keep that kind of the youthful essence with him. I don't know. I didn't think it was straight up like market research. I think he was like actually trying to figure out kind of what's going on with the kids.
Well, I mean, it clearly helps in market research as well. So, I mean, right. I think it helps in multi facets, but I do think there definitely was a good chunk of that was market research. A good chunk of his.
Well, that's the great thing about Don is that it was both. He, for himself and for his to keep that persona that he has, it was what makes him so good at his job, is how he can just see into people. And so I think it was personal and business.
Mm-hmm. Along the lines of the youth thing, what do we think? I mean, clearly there's a large disconnect between Don, at least Don's energy, and Megan's youthful energy, I suppose, where she's always trying to get him to do stuff, whether it's go to the island with her friends or even having that surprise party. And Don is clearly just, I mean, I don't know. I don't think he wants. He doesn't really want to do it, but he also, I feel, is almost too tired to do it as well. Like he's finding out that he can't hang like he used to.
Yeah.
It seems like they're playing that angle up, especially in his relationship.
Well, that was I thought that was a nice moment as well, because again, if you look at his relationship with Megan compared to what he had with Betty. Betty would never have been able to talk him into going. When Don said, "I don't want to go," that would have been the end of the conversation. Yeah. But Megan knows how to disarm him, and she, I think, because he has told her so much about him, she kind of just sees through his grumpy facade. Where Betty, you know, she I think she was more immature than Megan in a way.
Oh, way more immature, yeah.
Yeah, she would just you know, gone and just stormed off.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Betty, that is one huge bitch.
Wait.
Yeah, that was
the effects that they did for her is way better than any of the dragons and stuff that they did on Game of Thrones.
Are you sure she just didn't gain the weight?
No, it was fake. It was like that stuff they had on Peggy first season.
Okay.
Yeah, and the stuff that they had on Peggy wasn't very good. The stuff that they had her doing was real good. And actually, there might have been a little natural compliment to it, because I think the actress was pregnant during this season.
She is.
When they were shooting it.
I believe that, I'm sure that her body is bigger than it usually is, but
nothing like what they showed.
No, she looked like one of the clumps.
And I really liked also like how they did, like, the, you know, they had her sitting there, and obviously, you know, like anything, like, you know, it's just makeup on her face or whatever. But then they had someone else's, you know, chubby arms like reaching up and like getting stuff. Like they must have had someone sitting behind her, like reaching up with doing the old arms behind the back trick.
I mean, I don't know about that. All I know is that the body double when she gets out of the bath, that was a little poorly done, I would have to
say. That was in bad taste.
Yeah, not only a bad taste, just definitely not anything that would resemble Betty. That woman might have been like 30 pounds too heavy. I was so pissed that like...
The water was like cresting over the bathtub.
When I first saw how big Betty had gotten, I was so ecstatic. Like,
I was too.
I had a huge smile on my face. I was watching with one of my roommates, and we were just so happy about it. And then they took it all away when it became about, like, maybe she had cancer or whatever.
Yeah.
It was, you know, whatever was wrong with her thyroid. And I was like, no. How could you take all this joy away from me right now?
I mean, like, oh, that's the reason why she's overweight, because of the thyroid?
Exactly. I was just so disappointed. Although, clearly, it's not the thyroid, because
nope.
She's eating a couple Sundays for herself. Yeah. She's getting a little of Sally's on the side.
The show's like hilarious, and I wish I'd written down more of the one-liners that I liked in the first two episodes, but like in the third one, they almost all center around Betsy. When she's having the tea or whatever with her acquaintance, and the fortune teller lady comes over, she's like looking in the tea leaves, and then she's like, you know, blah blah blah, oh, and you're a rock. You're really strong. And then as soon as she says that, Bette starts to cry. Like, that's fucking brilliant. And then when she's getting in it with Henry about being overweight, and he's like, oh, you know, I don't see any of that. You know, you're always beautiful to me. And she's like, that's why your mother's obese, or because your mother's obese. and then the third one that I really liked was was when Don and Raj were talking at the very end, and you know, like about like the, you know, Pete Campbell having his fingers on him or whatever, and then Don drops the bomb on him, and Raj is like, "Well, Betts is a fighter; she'll be all right." And Don like gives him this look, and he's like, "Come on."
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, no, that was. I mean, Matthew Weiner, or the writers, or the directors, or whatever, they realize how melodramatic it is. And they definitely play it up enough so that it can be hilarious while also being, like, you know, kind of dramatic as well. So they definitely do a really good job of playing up the right parts to, like, get you laughing and not to seem as though it's just like, come on, this is...
And when Henry had the munchies, he was eating all the burgers. Is that Harry? Wait, what's that guy's name? Is it Harry? Harry? I know it was in Harry. Yeah, when he's munching on the burgers, that was fucking gold.
He ate like 20 White Castle burgers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, we've all been there.
Oh, man.
I really enjoyed all the scenes at the Rolling Stones concert. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of comedy in there. And it was great because we, you know, we got in that last episode that, you know, Megan telling Peggy that Don doesn't like Harry. And then, you know, this whole episode, Harry's just trying to get closer to Don. And, you know, Harry was like, hey, maybe we could go out to dinner before the concert. And Don's just like, nope. And then,
all right, I guess you could pick me up at 7:30 and I'll be well fed.
Yeah, I'll be well fed. And then if he did end up going to eat dinner, then he was like, you know, obviously those munches hit him hardcore after the show. Yeah.
And I also loved when, at the concert, Harry was, you know, trying to impress that girl with his Charlton Heston story about seeing him naked. And he's like, you know, do you know who that is? And the girl's like, no, I don't know who that is. And then he keeps telling the story. And you see Don just like rubbing his head. And finally, he just explodes. It's like, she already told you she doesn't know who he is.
Yeah, no, this episode definitely had, it definitely was comedic gold for the most part. Oh, man. Good stuff for sure. What do we think? I mean, not to even mention, like, maybe the worst gag of it all is Don's new secretary, Dawn.
Yes.
Yeah.
You didn't like that?
I mean, it was corny, but
I don't know what the purpose of that was. I'll be interested to see where that storyline goes. I think this is going to be the first time that we've had a black recurring character on the show since Hoss, the elevator guy.
Well.
I don't remember Hoss the elevator guy.
He was only in like two or three episodes. Same.
No, he was around for a while. Remember, and
he
remember
wasn't
Don?
A real character though. They just talked to him. They like bounced
true,
something
but
off.
But they
him.
Had there were some good scenes.
Oh right. Yeah.
Don used him one time to embarrass Roger, and to pretend like the elevator was out, so that Roger would have to go up the stairs, and he threw up in front of all those guys.
Yeah. They also had What's-His-Face's girlfriend there. She was in a couple episodes.
Yeah, Kinsey.
Yeah, Kinsey, Paul Kinsey. So
Kinsey was there?
He had a black girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
She was
sorry.
In a couple episodes.
Wait, what is Kinsey up to? What happened to him?
He's just at another agency, right?
Yeah, he didn't make the jump.
He just got camped, yeah. Yeah, from...
He's back at the old place, I guess, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Is now a part of PPL? Is that what happened?
Whatever it is, yeah. Something like that.
Some huge conglomerate.
Yeah. Or I think they're part of McCann.
I can't remember.
What was I going to say?
But yeah, the Don, I mean, I just thought it was just a real literal way of saying, like, look, it's just people. It's just people.
Perhaps. I mean, that is what it felt like in this episode, but, you know, with this show especially, we have no idea where that storyline is going.
Yeah, I mean, everything is apparently, Matthew Weiner apparently meticulously plans every last detail, so I'm sure something will come up with those two sometime later on.
But yeah, there were a lot of odd choices in this episode.
Lots of odd choices. There were a couple odd scenes. I think the oddest one to me was definitely the scene at the end with the new hiree, Ginsburg there. I can't remember his first name. I don't know, I guess maybe it was there to get a glimpse into his character, but it just seemed completely out of character for the entire show.
It did, because we just met this guy and we're already following him home.
And getting, like, a glimpse into his true character as opposed to how the entire first season was basically just based on getting our glimpse into, you know, the actual Donald Draper. And here we are already getting, like, the setup scene with Ginsburg and his really religious father who prayed over him. Or, like, I don't know. I didn't understand any of
that. Yeah, I really don't know how that scene fit into the rest of the episode.
I definitely agree that it felt kind of weird, but I think as far as, like, its thematic content, I think was dead on. Like, it just illustrates, like, the difference between, you know, the generation gap. Like, here the guy's, like, speaking Yiddish or whatever and then comes over and prays. And he doesn't, like, you know, I guess he doesn't, you know, jump out of his seat that he's happy about his son being hired. But, you know, I mean, he's happy, but he's not, you know, ecstatic about it. So that kind of further illustrates it, you know, that, you know, he just doesn't have the youthful vitality that his son has.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about also the dream sequence there? This is our first dream sequence since, I believe, the premiere of episode 3, where Don is dreaming in the old house, where Betty, this dream sequence was Betty being dead, I guess.
Yeah.
Being a ghost, if you will, and everyone's wearing black, and I don't know what, I mean.
No one can see her.
Exactly. That seemed like a kind of a weird scene.
I think it was just Betts being dramatic again, like he always is.
Oh, well, hold on. Being dramatic. I mean, if you don't, you think that you might be dying. I thought it was a perfectly valid dream for her to have. But as far as showing it to us, that was...
That's what I'm saying. Like, they're not going to show that if one of the other characters has that dream. They're only going to show it if Betts has the dream.
I mean, I feel like it just seemed... Again, it seemed like it was out of place unless they're going to keep it... I mean, I don't know. I guess it also mirrors the fact that she's kind of losing control over the family as well, you know, where the kids want to spend more time. At least Sally wants to spend more time with Don as opposed to her... But I don't know. It just seemed like a really weird... Because usually the dreams are like... They tell us something like that we never knew before. Like they're really, you know, some sort of really kind of intense thing. And this just seemed kind of thrown in almost.
That's true. I don't know what purpose it served other than to remind us of who Betty is. That she is emotionally a child still. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even though, like I said, I think it's perfectly valid for, you know, someone to have a dream like that right after they think that they, you know, might have been diagnosed with cancer, it was still like a very, like a dream that a kid would have. Like, well, okay, well, I'm not going to be at the party anymore. Like, you know, they're putting up my chair at the table.
That's what I'm saying, man.
Okay.
She's like, child.
What do we think about this new guy? I guess maybe the new Don, if you will. Ginsburg here.
I dig him. I think there's going to be some high comedy with him. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, he's a strange guy. I'm not ready to call him the new Don.
I don't know about that.
He's going to be probably the most creative guy there, I'm going to assume. Like, they kept on talking about how good his work was. So I'm going to assume that other than Don, he's going to be the most creative guy. And I think him and Peggy will clearly, they definitely set them up to be... to butt heads creatively as well.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, he's someone who's got a strange personality that you wouldn't expect to get good results out of, but there's something about his detachment from, I don't know what his deal is, that I guess he just can come up with that stuff.
Well, I mean, yeah, not only that, but he was saying, you know, I can act however you need me to act, which is very... very Don/Dick Whitman-esque.
Very true.
So I think the parallels are... quite indubitably. but yeah, so I think that he's... I hope his character isn't too neurotic Brooklyn Jew, like it was when we first met him. Otherwise, I think that would be too much.
We don't want like a sitcom character on the show.
We don't need like a stereotype 60s Jew.
Right. So.
But, you know, this is interesting that, you know, with Roger's line about, you know, when are things going to get back to normal, that we're starting to see around the office that things aren't
going to get back to normal.
Yeah, the 60s are creeping in and, you know, they've hired their first black employee, and now they've hired a Jew, which Don stated in the first episode of the series that he would never do.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of an offhanded comment.
Was it like when they got that trophy or whatever, or the trophy, like that idol? He was like, at least we're not going to hire a Jew.
I think Roger walked in and said, did we hire a Jew or something? And Don goes, not while I'm in charge.
Yeah.
right.
But yeah, this was an odd. There were a lot of odd scenes in this episode. This was also Jon Hamm's directorial debut for the show. Mm. So I don't know. I don't know if it had anything to do with that.
I don't know. Maybe. I guess we'll have to see how some of his other directorial his director's chair episodes turn out.
Yeah.
One last thing. Couple things. I guess. Where do we think? Both, I mean, I believe Matthew Weiner has even come out and stated that there's not going to be much more Betty in this season due to her pregnancy while they were filming. So I don't think we're going to get much, much more. I'm sure we'll check in every once in a while, but what do we think about the future of both of these relationships, both Henry and Betty and Megan and Don? Especially because I especially bring this up because of the last scene, well, not the last scene, but one of the last scenes where Henry answers the phone and it's Don.
Henry, that was an icy conversation.
Yeah,
that was
icy. He's clearly pissed off. Like before, they almost kind of sided with each other, you know, because they realized that Betty was basically a 12-year-old girl.
Yeah, where did that come from?
But yeah, Henry all of a sudden just got, he was pissed as hell.
Well, I think he's obviously very touchy about the relationship, that neither of them are happy. It's quite obvious. And, you know, his wife has let herself go, and he probably still has some jealousies and resentment towards Don. Like this, he probably feels like this family isn't his yet. You know, Betty, he was really upset when he realized that Betty had called Don about the situation, and, you know, the kids, all of them still love Don, and, you know, none of them blame him or hate him.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't like Betty and Henry's chances at all. Mm-hmm. But Don and Megan, that's an interesting situation that they have going on, because I think a lot of people feel like, oh, this can't last. But I don't know. Right now, they've got their issues, but I think that they're a good couple.
Yeah,
I think they're a pretty solid couple. I just don't. I mean, I think eventually we're gonna get to a point where Don is threadbare, and, you know, he just can't. Like, Megan's gonna want him to do all this stuff. I mean, we've already seen all of it. You know, where Megan is forcing him, you know, pleading with him, forcing him to do these things, and he's just like, no, I'm not doing it, you know? So there's going to be some tension there. Clearly there's going to be, I mean, the amount of sexual harassment going on between Don and his wife in the office.
She loves it.
She does love it.
I don't know where exactly in the 60s/70s all the sexual harassment, feminism stuff began.
Hold on. I mean, in the last season, remember he had the prostitute. She was like slapping him around and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
he digs the S&M.
That's the only thing that I think how this relationship could survive is because, you know, she is able to put him in his place. Like that one really crazy scene that just seemed crazy in the first episode until you realize what was going on, where she was in her underwear. She was like, no, you don't get this. And then she's like cleaning, and he's like, no, I'm taking what I want. She's like, nope, you gotta
watch. You just
have
to watch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So clearly she can put him in his place up to a certain point, and clearly he enjoys that. So I think that might be the only saving grace of the relationship, because I can't see there being any way where Don and Megan don't clash towards the middle or the end of the season, because Megan has been elevated to creative. And Don, even though he says he doesn't care about work, he's still a creative guy. He still knows what's good. And I have a feeling Megan is just not going to be up to snuff.
I'm sure there's going to be a lot more tension. I mean, it's clear that they don't have like we never fight kind of relationship. But I don't think that's the only saving grace in the relationship. We also have to remember that she knows about Dick Whitman, which I think was a huge block in Don's relationship. I think that's part of what keeps him isolated from everyone, is that they don't know who he is, but she does. Mm-hmm. And I think also the age difference is a positive thing. I mean, it's going to cause a lot of problems, but that, like we were talking about before, Don's just inherent need to chase youth. Like, I don't see him cheating on her, at least not anytime soon, because she plays those games with him, like surprising him with that awesome maid scenario, whatever the hell game they were playing.
Yeah, I'm lucky.
Well, I mean, like, who does that?
Until I realized what was happening, and it took me almost like 2/3 of the scene to realize, like, oh, it's going in a sexual place.
It was always going in a sexual place. You just didn't know it was going to be a rape or not.
I
didn't realize till she was bent over in his face, like, very clearly.
Yeah, and, like, looking back at him, and then I was like, wait a minute here. Something's going down. They're going to fuck on this dirty floor. It made you feel really weird and awkward, be like, okay, wait a minute, what the hell's going on? And then you realize that's kind of their relationship. I'm not saying that their relationship is going to necessarily end because Don or Megan cheats. I just think eventually they'll come to this point where, like,
it's just that youth.
He's too old.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the energy. She's too young. She's not of the same mindset and generation. And the fact that he is her boss and her work probably is not going to be the best, I think, will end up, you know, ruining the relationship.
That's very possible. But, you know, the work thing is easily fixable. I mean, Don is a wealthy guy. She could stop working there at any point. But, I mean, but as far as we bring up the cheating, I guess I just look at what went wrong in his relationship with Betty. And not like she was any sort of innocent victim. I mean, most of what went wrong in the relationship was Don's fault. He was always in the driver's seat. But it's his isolation from people and his, you know, serial cheating. I think that was a big part of what ended their relationship. And I'm just saying that those things, we won't, I don't think we'll necessarily have to worry about them as much with Megan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But who knows? You never know with the show.
I wanna bring up one last thing before we part here. Don's got like a French fetish going, right?
Does he?
Like, because he's got the French Canadian here, and then if you remember, second to last episode of season 2, where he meets all those French swingers. I don't know. It seems like he's got a little French thing going on. That's all I got to say about that.
What does that mean if he does?
I mean, I don't think it means anything. I think it just means that he's got a little French thing. Maybe the French are a little bit more open and he likes that.
Yeah, maybe the last season will take place in Canada. He'll move the firm. He'll move the firm there.
Oh, man. Yeah. But yeah, no, unless we have anything else.
I liked, just last thing, I really liked Betty's friend's description of what it feels like to know that you're dying, as far as that her whole drift in the ocean metaphor. I think Matthew Weiner is great at coming up with just phrasing things the right way.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like a sad little metaphor that she gave.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to remember, too, this is the 60s, so cancer is basically a death sentence.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to now, where many cancers are treatable, at least, if not curable, so.
And one last thing, sorry, I in the beginning of the episode, it made me laugh. It started with, you know, like three kids trying to shove Betty's big ass into this dress. They couldn't get the zipper up.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to Megan looking in the mirror, and she, you know, she's just like, Don, can you zip me up? And he just, like, with like one finger, just effortlessly zips her up.
He zips her up, and the dress still hung loosely on her, too.
Yeah.
Like, there was some room up in that dress.
So it was a little funny juxtaposition they had there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In any case, I think that's going to do it for this week's pod. Next week, we'll be coming at you with yet another bag pod. You can always come and check out the site at in-the-bag2gs.com. We try to keep it updated as much as possible. Hopefully, we'll have some real nice content. I believe Alan over there has got a nice little article waiting to be published. So, if you really liked the dulcet tones of Alan's voice, you can come check out his writing skills as well. And yeah, hopefully we'll make
just don't ever do that again.
Yeah, that was too much Vincent Price for one podcast.
I can't promise that won't happen again.
Fair enough.
In any case, we'll come at you guys next week. Later.
Later. Yeah.